From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been over a week since a massive fire struck an overcrowded refugee camp on the Greek island of Lesbos. More than 13,000 refugees had been living in Moria camp, a space designed for fewer than four times as many people. Authorities say multiple fires had been lit around the camp, which has now been almost completely destroyed. A week before the devastating fire, the camp had been placed under quarantine after one resident tested positive for the coronavirus. There are now at least 35 confirmed infections among the refugees, who hail largely from Afghanistan, Syria, Somalia, and other war-torn nations. The displaced families are being moved into a new temporary camp, but so far only about 1,200 people have agreed to move in. We turn now to Amy Williams, a journalist, filmmaker, and executive director and co-founder of Global Girl Media. With her is Fatima Jafari, an Afghan refugee who lived in Moria camp for 8 months. The two of them join me from Athens. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sonali. It's good to be here.
So, Amy, let me start with you. Tell me a little bit about Moria camp in general, and I want to get Fatima's reactions to it as well, since she lived there. This was a space that, as I mentioned, 13,000 people had been living in, and it was terribly overcrowded, and it had been marked by international aid organizations for being a place that had absolutely horrendous living conditions, right?
That's exactly right. And the reason I brought Fatima on is because to be a woman, a single woman, or any woman living there was a nightmare. And in particular, I think the impact on women and children, there were massive human rights violations in terms of the overcrowding, access to health care, psychological care. They referred to it as a living hell. So it's not surprising that it burned, and it's been very interesting to note that nobody quite knows exactly who set the fires. The refugees are adamant that it was right-wing Greek fascists, and some Afghans say it was Syrians, some Syrians say it was Afghans, the Africans say it was the fascists. It's all a big muddle. However, the Greek police have arrested four Afghans and claim that they are suspects. So we don't really know. But the entire camp burned to the ground, and it was quite a scene to witness, to walk through the devastation.
Fatima, tell me about your experience there and what it felt like for you to see that camp burn down now.
You know, I was happy to camp with burn.
Really?
Because I had a bad situation was there. Because in the winter, the camp was more than 20,000 people. In the camp, it was so much worse than now. But it doesn't matter if people are in the streets or people were in the Moria. It actually was the same.
How did you eat? Where did you sleep? What were the kinds of arrangements made for day-to-day living for refugees there like yourself?
Actually, I really feel what they're feeling now, what they experience. If I was with them on the street, it was easier to see them from outside.
I think one of the things she told me that struck me was the long lines, that your entire life is like one big long line. You would wake up in the morning at 6 and line up for breakfast, which you didn't get until 9. And then you would eat your breakfast and get back in line for 3 hours for, you know, a very meager meal for lunch, and the same for dinner. So it was, and also lines for the papers, just the bureaucracy of trying, and I won't even go into how complicated it is for a refugee to go through the various stages of paperwork to get off the island. But she has an interesting story because she actually did manage to get, after 8 months in this living hell, get off the island. She got the papers for that with the help of an NGO. If you don't have a lawyer or an NGO or somebody really helping you, it's very difficult to navigate.
And what's really interesting is that, one might imagine from the outside that these 13,000 refugees, who many people in Greece, as you mentioned, the fascist movements have said they don't want them there, but the refugees are actually trapped there, right? And in fact, just as you were implying, Fatima had to struggle to leave, you know, even though she actually had a place to stay outside of the camp. Why are refugees trapped in the refugee camps in Lesbos?
That's a good question. It's a question all the refugees are asking now that they're living on the streets, raw in the open. They scrambled to whatever they could find in the forest to build little shelters for the last 3-4 days. But all the ones that I spoke to and interviewed were asking, why is this new camp being built? And it's a closed camp. So not only will it be a kind of state-of-the-art facility, it's really a jail, an open-air jail, because it'll be far more patrolled. Those who've gone in so far, out of, say, the 13,000 on the street, they're kind of trickling in now, but we have, kind of just talked to somebody that said that they will all be in there in the next few days. They don't have a choice. But the question really is, why are we being held like prisoners when we have the human right to seek asylum? The processing is woefully long and complicated, as I mentioned. And there's just such a huge broken EU policy towards helping these migrants make it to the next stage of their lives. And the hope is that we've all learned from the fire and that the new camp will have separate bathroom facilities and shower facilities for women, so they don't have to hold it in all night long for fear of being raped on their way to the bathroom. The hope is that there will be psychosocial support for all of the trauma. I mean, they're triply trauma. They've come from war. Now they had to deal with COVID. They were locked down in that camp for how many months? They were locked down. All of Greece was locked down for 2.5 months. Things were open briefly, but then the actual refugee camps, because they were so overcrowded, the fear was that one case would sweep through and many, many people would suffer and die. So they locked these people in what was already an unlivable situation. And I think that this is what created the literal explosion of the fire. Right. So now they're going to do it again. They're going to lock people in again. And the messages we're getting from those who've gone in is that they took their shoelaces, they took any kind of instrument that could be nail clippers. I mean, just as if you were entering a prison. The tents are for 10 people and they're not that large. And by the way, the first camp, I saw it being built, and I think you have some photos that I sent you.
Right.
I mean, it does look brand new, and pretty much every EU country has sent supplies. Trucks were just rumbling in all day long. But they're supposed to build 3 or 4 more. But the big mystery for me is, within 3 days building this camp, how can you house 12 to 13,000? Are they going to be all crammed in there again? We don't know. And by the way, as a journalist, there were many restrictions for us getting access even to speak with the people. I had to hike over a mountain, essentially, to get in at one point. One day we were allowed in, another day we weren't. You have to go through all these procedural things to get information to go into the new camp. It remains to be seen if we've learned anything from the last 5 years of the horror of Moria.
My guests are Amy Williams and Fatima Jafari, joining me from Athens in Greece. The two of them just returned from Moria, from Lesbos, where the Moria camp was burned to the ground just about a little over a week ago. And for our TV audience, the photographs that we were showing on our screen were taken by Amy and sent to us. And in a few minutes, we'll play a video as well, which showcases what the refugees who are trapped on Lesbos are going through. But before we do that, Amy, tell me a little bit about the context around coronavirus a little bit more. You said that, of course, all of Greece was locked down, as many countries in Europe had been around the virus. But when the first COVID case was documented in Moria, how did authorities react? Because it's not as though it's easy to practice social distancing in a crowded refugee camp. I imagine there's a lot of fear in the camp about the disease.
Yeah, absolutely. But interestingly enough, as we were walking up and down the street, interviewing the people that were sheltering outside the camp after the fire, there were very few masks. And I think there's a general feeling that Corona isn't something that they should worry. I mean, I think they're much more worried about their day-to-day lives, quite frankly. But I did not see, you know, nobody's giving them masks. Why is that? I was actually handing out masks myself and trying to tell them, really take care of yourself. Please take care of yourself. I think that there was an effort in the camp to educate, but I'd be curious to know what you think about that, because I did not see refugees wearing masks.
Hmm. Fatima?
They are sharing everything with each other. I think, is it impossible to be away of the corona in the camp, because it's too crowded. When you do live in the tent with four family, how you want to manage it?
Then again, 13,000 plus people. 13,000 plus people living in a camp designed for fewer than four times that amount. So there's a new camp that has been built. But just to give a sense of how trapped people have been feeling, I want to play now a video of the refugee camp featuring an Afghan mother that my guest Amy Williams did. And for our radio audience, I'm going to read over the subtitles. We are in a very bad situation. All of our property and our life is in jeopardy. The biggest wish of all refugees in the camp and all refugees is a big freedom to go from here. How long should we stay in a jail? How long? We are really prisoners here. They won't even let us buy anything ourselves to eat, even for our children. The situation is really desperate. We had no future. Our future was ruined. Let these children have a future, build a future, benefit the community, to stand on their own two feet. I'd like to be a doctor in the future, to help people. I can help many sick people. Please, all the women in the European Union, I have this request. For example, if you are a mother, for 1 second, think you are here instead of me. When your child comes to you and asks for bread and water, and there's nothing you can say. Really, just think that you are here in the same situation. What would you be feeling if you were here? The only wish our children and our young ones have is, when can we get out of here? Our children keep asking if our home will burn again. What are we going to do? And hopefully, God willing, we will get out from here. They said our freedom ticket is coming. The children were so happy. They said, thank God the camp is burning. The boat is coming to take us. And that is a video created by my guest, Amy Williams, showcasing the voices of several refugees at Moria camp in Athens, or what was left really of the camp, or the outskirts of the camp, where people have now been displaced to after the camp burned down. Amy, what was it like? And Fatima Jafari, who's also with her, who was a former resident of Moria, what was it like to walk through the camp that had been burnt down? And where are people living? Are they just, you mentioned that they were just camped out wherever they could?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's inside the actual enclosed area of Moria. They're on the stretch of road between the old camp and the new camp. And it was like walking through a gauntlet of massive suffering. People were really traumatized and tired and hungry and thirsty. There was no major distribution of food or water. Small NGOs, if they were allowed in, were able to get in some food and some bread, some water, some basics. I followed a very small NGO into a gym that they had, which is where Fatima learned how to practice yoga, actually. And they were sheltering 45 people and trying to feed them. And I thought it was absurd, you know, and a tiny little NGO of four or five people cooking every day and hiking in with the food. And you could just see it on their faces. People were just at their wits end. They were basically saying, look, I'd rather just I'm dead already. I'd rather just die from a police bullet than go back into another camp, another closed camp. I think they feel very, very, very at the end of their tolerance of the way they've been treated. And I think I was actually hoping that this fire would kind of raise much more awareness about the situation and really push the EU to open its borders, or at least accept more of the refugees. So far, we've had a kind of a strange speech from the EU chief executive saying that Europe must do better, but nothing specific.
I understand Germany has agreed to take in 1,500 refugees.
1,500, where are the rest of the 11,500 going to go? There were 800 minors previously, 4 or 5 months ago. Some minors were airlifted to, I think, one of the Scandinavian countries in Germany as well, but now some more minors have left. They say that the most vulnerable will be the ones to go to Germany. But it's both the way they're forced to live in such close quarters and the fact that they have to wait so long for their asylum procedure. Some of them have waited up to 3 years. Wow. It means their entire life is on hold. And not only is it on hold, it's on hold within a space, you know, a 2 by 2 meter space. That's going to drive anyone crazy, right?
And as per international law, as, you know, given the historic framework of Europe and war and refugees, these refugees that are leaving war-torn nations where European countries and the United States have had a hand in are simply seeking to exercise what is their right. Right. I mean, this is something that we sort of forget, as though Europe is doing a big favor letting the refugees into even these appalling refugee camps. But international law states that refugees fleeing violence have the right to seek asylum.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for sure there are people that are economic refugees, and that's a whole nother discussion. But the majority are from war-torn countries and have documentation showing that they are being persecuted. I met a medical doctor. He had just graduated as an internist in Afghanistan, and he actually had a paper that was a threatening, like an official letter from the Taliban: if you do not leave, we will kill you. You know, this is exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. And I've met lots of people that have horror stories about why they've left, and, you know, people's houses being bombed or watching relatives being killed and knowing that they would be next. And I think for me, my personal interest as a filmmaker has always been to tell the female story, the woman's story, the women and children. And I think there's also another issue that I've seen in Greece in particular, and among Afghan and Iranian, the Afghans that have fled to Iran and now are fleeing to Europe, that there's an enormous amount of gender-based violence. And you're seeing minors, young women coming on their own, some of them bringing their younger children. I mean, Fatima is an example of it. How old were you when you left Iran?
23.
And she brought her little brother. She's the guardian of her little brother. The two of them came completely alone. Mm.
And I understand that, just to give a sense of how trapped the refugees are in Lesbos, Greece, you know, where they're being forced to live under terrible conditions. I understand that you had trouble getting Fatima, or Fatima had trouble getting back out of Moria and Lesbos back to Athens, where she lives, and that, Amy, you had to intervene to help, you know, release her because authorities, since she was an Afghan refugee, weren't letting her leave the island?
Listen, it's a massive mess. There's so much confusion and dysfunction in the processing and the way things have been handled. And I have to say, I can't blame it all on Greece. Mm-hmm. I actually think that Greece, over these last 5 years, dealing with, I think there's been over 1 million people moving through Greece on their way to Europe. They're just overwhelmed. And they're a country also that's suffering great economic burden. And so it's really the EU that is at fault here. And the fact that they're just keeping these people as far away from, you know, the wealthier European nations on these islands in these tiny camps. And I think that that there has to be some way of pressuring the EU to own up to the fact that they've created a situation that's just completely untenable. And maybe we will see these new camps, you know, as an improvement. I've been in other refugee camps in Africa, in Jordan. They're nothing compared to what you see in Moira. You know, people have been living without food and water, and I saw a 10-day-old baby, right, that had, we didn't even talk about the tear gassing. They did a peaceful protest led by women and children and the Greek police.
After the campfire.
Yeah, that was 3 days. Well, they were protesting to say, we don't want to go into another camp. They really were hoping, and I think people were holding out on these roads. They were really hoping that a ship would come and take them to another country and or at least get to Athens. But we didn't finish talking about how I got Fatima out. So she had gone down there for a yoga teacher training. She had started training in yoga while she lived in Moria. And there is a fantastic NGO called Yoga and Sport for Refugees. That's very small and they're doing great work. So you can check them out, look them up online if you want to support. And she was taking a teacher training so she could bring yoga back to Athens and teach yoga here among the many refugees that live in Athens. And she was told when she went to the airport to leave, she had her ticket, everything, proof that she lives in Athens. You're a refugee, no refugees are allowed off the island. Completely illegal, right? And she tried twice. With all the paperwork, and I went with her last night and, you know, just kind of threw my press credentials on the table and stood like this and spoke a little Greek. And we waited. We waited about a half an hour, you know, the sort of bureaucracy of calling and waiting and looking through the papers and not finding what they needed. But in the end, he said, you're free to go. And I think he nearly collapsed.
Wow.
Because she was looking at her whole life starting over again, being pushed into this camp and having to start the whole process all over again.
Yeah.
And this is just one of many stories of how inept the whole system is.
Well, Amy and Fatima, I want to thank the two of you so much for joining us today and giving us a glimpse of what's happening with the refugees on Lesbos. Thank you so much. Good luck to you.
Thanks for having us.
My guests have been Amy Williams, journalist, filmmaker, and executive director and co-founder of Global Girl Media, and Fatima Jafari, an Afghan refugee who had lived in Moria refugee camp for 8 months, joining us now from Athens in Greece. We've been discussing the burning down of the refugee camp and what's to happen to the more than 12 to 13,000 refugees living on the island. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.